Welcome, all of you. We're going to get started. This is the City of South Jordan Council Study Meeting. Today is Tuesday, March 4th, 2025. My name is Dawn Ramsey. I have the privilege of serving as mayor of the City of South Jordan with our outstanding city council seated here with me and our the best staff in the state. We appreciate you being here. Thank you to all of you. We have a lot of visitors here with us tonight and we welcome you. We have some that will be presenting. I don't know if I see any other members of the public here yet, but we may have some that come. If not, they'll be with us online or watch this later. We welcome all of you tonight. And we're going to open this meeting with an invocation by Councilmember Jason McGuire.
Our dear kind Heavenly Father, we are grateful to be able to gather in this wonderful city. We are grateful to live in a land of freedom and pray that thou continue to watch over this country and bless us. We pray, Father, that thou would be with us this night, that we may discuss civilly the matters of this city, and that we may have thy guidance and direction in making the decisions that are before us this evening. And these things we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you so much. All right. Coordination. Anybody have anything you want to go over? There's a lot happening. There's a lot.
Well, the legislative season's almost over. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Do you want to do all the capital at the, in this meeting or the next one?
Next one. Yeah, okay. That's okay.
Because they're voting on things right now.
Yeah. Still working on some things. And I've asked Mr. Luce to make a couple of phone calls. So if he steps in and out, I'm just letting you know it's because there's some things that we just are still working on, right? Other people are still working and there's some things we need to work on. So if he needs to step out, that's what we'd like to have happen. So here's what I will coordinate. The reason that as we go tonight, my voice is going to get worse. I had the chance to be at the Capitol today and speak to about 400 students from Hurricane to Logan, from fourth grade to 12th grade today. And it was Utah Women Making History Day at the Capitol. Anyway, I got to be part of that. And by the end, my voice is just tired. It's just tired. So I'm hoping it will hold out. But it was really neat and really fun because, we go up to the Capitol. I spent an awful lot of time in meetings up there and working on things. And I ended up being there yesterday till 5:30. Just lots of things. You guys, so many of you come up and put a lot of time, plus all the work that's happening here outside of that. And so it's fun to get to go be part of things like that, to get to greet our students and to get to talk to these kids. And there's a lot of great things that happen at the state capitol, and I made sure that the kids all knew about the People's House and that this building doesn't belong to the governor, it doesn't belong to the legislature, it belongs to you, to all of you, so enjoy your time there. So that would be my coordination message is, there's only a few days left, they're going to be intense, they're going to be, nobody's going to have a voice left by the end of it, but we're
so blessed.
That's
probably kind of a
blessed.
Revelation to the legislature that house didn't belong.
That they don't own it, yeah. Well, I didn't tell them. Yeah, but just a reminder that we really are so blessed to live in this great nation and to have the form of government and the system that we have. It lets all of us be part of it, and we're really fortunate to be in these seats. And so just remember that as you're like, I am tired of these messages asking me to contact so-and-so and that we're working on this. It's important work, and we're blessed to get to be part of it and to represent the folks that we do. So I'm grateful for the legislators that we have from our area, too. They're working hard, and we may all agree, we may not all agree. We're never all going to agree on everything, but that's the beauty of our system. So as this last week of the legislative session rounds up and we're all tired and we're not to the finish line yet, I was having pep talks today with the governor's staff. I was having pep talks with league staff. It's good. And good work is happening. So, all right, let's move on to item D. Just real quick, going through our regular agenda, and then I'm going to ask for a motion to amend this agenda for this meeting really quickly. We've got an appointment to the Arts Council, who we've already met with and decided to appoint to the Arts Council. We have a resolution to amend our fee schedule, which is actually Mulligan's. It's making some slight adjustments to the pricing at Mulligan's before peak season gets started because they need to be made, and that's what that is. Amending our moderate income housing plan as part of our general plan, which we are required to do. And I got to tell you, Stephen and his team and the whole team have been way far ahead, so far ahead on this that when the Department of Workforce Services was having another turnover in their staff. It left nobody for us to even submit our stuff to and work with because we were so far ahead of the curve. And we were able to get that resolved, make a few phone calls to the powers that be and say, we need to have the right staff there at the state level for us to be able to work with. But it's because our team has been so proactive in being ahead of the game because we don't want to find out the day that we're supposed to, you know, find out that there was some arbitrary decision that something wasn't as it should be, you know. So really, Stephen will present that. And there's a lot of good information on there. But our team is doing great work on our moderate income housing plan as part of our general plan. And then amending a portion of the code, the flag lot overlay zone. We'll talk about that. I think it's is related to some of the work that we've been doing of late. And our long-range planner, Joe Moss, will present that, and we'll have Stephen. Actually, Stephen, I'm going to see if you would give us a little, can you give us a preview about what that is and the nuance between whether it's simply administrative or if there's sure. wiggle room there or how that what that's going to look like?
Yeah, so as you'll recall, as that first flag lot overlay zone applicant came through, we realized we probably need to push pause and get your further input. We've had those discussions in January. We recognize that not everybody on the council is in favor of flag lots generally, but we took the input that we received that night, and Joe is going to present all of that. What he's going to present to you is a fully administrative concept. So it's a staff level approval of flag lots, as well as some other criteria and things that we hope will address your concerns. This is a proposal. It received positive recommendation from the Planning Commission, but we're here. If you still have concerns, this is not does not mean that we still can't work through those issues. So we can have that discussion tonight. And if we need to move the proposal closer to where it was in the overlay zone, we can. You want to bag flag lots altogether, that is also an option. So whatever we need to do to make this work, we'll make it work. And Joe is prepared to talk through all of that. But we did want to give you something to react to. So a very specific proposal that we are recommending as staff.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks so much. Anybody have any questions about that in this meeting?
We have to save them for the next meeting.
Okay. I'm going to ask for a motion to amend the agenda in this meeting and to move item E, our budget discussion, part two, E1, to swap that with E2, the PD floating zone development project, because we have the applicants for that project here. And would like you to hear what it is that they're looking at. You'll recall that was something that we just approved, this PD overlay zone in the area over along I-15. Anyway, we've got applicants here who've been working on a project, and so they don't have to stay for our whole budget meeting. I'd like to move them up, and then they can go do what they need to do, and we'll have our budget conversation. If that's possible, can I get a motion to swap E1 and E2?
Second.
Thank you. And Mr. McGuire and Mrs. Johnson, any discussion to that motion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we are going to flip-flop these two. And let's see. We're going to invite Mr. Schaefermeyer, Wade Williams, and team. Come on up. Some of you might remember Wade. He was instrumental in the district, in the creation of the district with the Boyer Company. And Wade's brought a team of folks here on a project that we're, honestly, I'm really excited for them to be here.
That's good for
Oh, we can pull it down. Here we go. I can stand.
No, I'm right. I'm going to stand up for just a minute anyway. We'll take turns.
Can I start, Mayor?
Yes.
Is it our turn?
And would you just briefly introduce? Then we'll turn to Wade and let Wade introduce everybody you brought with you. Okay?
Yeah, so I'll just give you some context so that their presentation makes sense in terms of the process forward. So the property, this is a PD floating zone development project. So it's like many of the development projects that have been presented to you. The reason this tool is used is because there's something different about the project that needs to be addressed that we can't accomplish in our code. So this allows you to go through the process, to have this discussion before they go through the entire rezone, to identify any issues or concerns that you have with the project so that as we go through the rezone that we can address those through a development agreement, principally, as well as, again, identify anything that's a concern to you that, that staff has not already identified. To just give you, orient to you, we're talking about the property on Jordan Gateway. To the south is Riverton Chevy. Kind of orient you to the south of there is the Walmart, and to the east is the VW dealership. To the west of the project is the Front Runner and also Union Pacific Railroad. So this is a closer view of the project area. The zoning in this area is commercial freeway. It allows the principal use that they're going to discuss tonight. What it doesn't allow is one of the other uses, which is a residential use that they are proposing. The other thing that we need to accomplish as part of this process is talk about parking and how we manage parking for a project like this. So to not still Wade's thunder, we'll just tee it up. We've got the video. Perfect. And then we can get into the rest of your
presentation. Do you have the video right now? Can you run that first, maybe?
And then I'm going to hand this to you.
It's really unfortunate that Mrs. Zander isn't here yet, because this would have probably...
That's her name all over.
Yeah, wait till you see what it is.
Because they don't trust me.
Yeah. Okay, let's see if you can come out. Video is still what it's about.
Count that one, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Can you hit play and let's... This is just a quick introductory video to kind of let you know a little bit about our group. So... Okay, quick question. Raise your hands, everybody in the room. Who has played pickleball at least once?
But I have to admit, all those people are way more intense than I am.
They're pretty serious, aren't they? They're pretty serious. Okay, we're here about pickleball. I mean, that's what brings us here. My name's Wade Williams. I'm here because my daughter married a Pardo, and they're pickleball players. And they asked me to kind of help them with a vision that they have. And so we put a little team together I'd like to introduce. This facility will be part of what a piece of a puzzle in our business model. And here tonight to kind of outline who we are and what we do, I've got Bryce Morgan. He's the president and of United Pickleball Association. There's been a little structural changes over the years. Brett McCormick is the chief marketing officer of the United Pickleball Association. These two gentlemen are going to talk a little bit about kind of who we are. Brett's going to talk about a little bit about why we want to do this project in Utah. I'm going to talk just a little bit about why we want to do it in your city. And then we're going to turn it over to some experts. They're going to walk through the project itself. And then we can stop, talk, ask questions along the way, anything you really need. But we, just on the outset, I just want to say it's a delight again to be in your city. Always have loved working in South Jordan. Your staff, your expertise, the city is very well run, and we're just excited to try to be a part of it. And we're going to try to do all we can to make you proud of us. So with that, I'm going to have Bryce kind of tell us a little bit about himself and about the company.
Yep.
So I'll stand up as well, just so I was wondering. Sure. So Bryce Morgan, president of the UPA. About 5 years ago, I got involved running pickleball tournaments. I didn't really know much about it. But fast forward now, you saw that video. That's a highlight of a couple of our tournaments across the country. So UPA actually houses, is a parent company of two professional pickleball leagues. The PPA Tour, which is a traditional bracket style, which you kind of see in tennis. And then we have Major League Pickleball, which is more of a team style based pickleball location based event, which is kind of like the Utah Jazz. So those two different businesses operate with some of the same resources and different things. So specifically under the MLP, there's a team called the Utah Black Diamonds, which hopefully you guys have heard of. If not, you'll hear more and more about them. So this facility would also host some of the events for that pickleball team, also a training event and a training pickleball facility. And the PPA Tour would also be able to come and bring a professional pickleball tournament to South Jordan. So the PPA Tour has about 25 events every year across the country, from Atlanta, Toronto, Canada. Toronto's the only one we've done outside the United States.
Australia.
Oh, that's right. Australia's been one. So that what that event looks like, and it depends on the size of the venues and the number of courts. In Utah, I think the most courts we have in one area, Brett, correct me if I'm wrong, is 16, right? Or maybe there's 20. St. George might have 24.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that includes, we have the top professionals in the whole country and the whole world signed with exclusive contracts with us. So you would see the best players in the world playing this event. It'd be broadcast on a variety of Fox, ESPN. We have our own network with tennis channel called the Pickleball TV channel, which hopefully you guys have seen it. It also includes amateur play. So one of our slogans is play where the pros play. I akin it to golf. If you guys like golf, going to play at Augusta National on a practice course and then watching Bubba Watson or Tiger Woods finish their round. So that's the crux of our business. It's been really fun. It's grown a lot over the last 5 years. Started at kind of dinky little facilities or privately owned facilities or public parks, and it's kind of grown into a big full-blown business with corporate sponsorships, heavy involvement from tourism boards and convention centers. We have close to 200 employees. Our main headquarters is in Dallas, Texas. And then the company was started here, so there's a handful of us still holding out and living in Utah. But it's a fun
business.
That's
how I was able to get them here tonight.
But yeah, it's a fun business, and appreciate the opportunity to talk more about what we want to talk about, or what we want in this project.
Okay. Brett's going to talk a little bit about kind of pickleball in Utah specifically, and kind of a little bit about his role with the company.
Yeah, I'll go. I've got some pretty cool data on some of the things that are going on. And once again, thanks so much for having us here and taking up your guys' time. This is really important to us. I'm a Utah born and raised guy. I love Utah. And so I'm excited to bring this here to Utah. One of my favorite things about pickleball is I play pickleball with my 8-year-old daughter and I play pickleball with my 73-year-old dad. There's no other sport that you can do that really and on a competitive basis like that. And it's you know, me and my wife have played with Wade and his wife before. And we can have a great time.
And they beat us pretty regularly.
Wade's not that good, but his wife is really, really, really good.
That is true.
And so we just hit the ball to Wade the whole entire time. It's pretty much me and Lisa playing against each other. Anyway, last year there was 37 million people that played pickleball. And if we keep on this pace, that means there'd be more people that play pickleball in 2026 than all other sports combined after the age of 18. We have singles, doubles, and mixed. Our viewership out of women's singles, men's singles, and doubles, our viewership, we get 5 times the amount of viewership on our mixed matches than we do on our other matches, which is amazing. The other thing that you should know is if you take our top 40 women and our top 40 men, their salaries are about $40,000 apart from each other. There's no other sport that does that. The other thing, we almost pay out as much as the WNBA pays out their pro players as well. So just some stats that you guys should know. We have like 100, we just signed like 10 people last week, but we're around 140 pro players that do this full time. There's 4 companies that we own. This is going into what Wade was just talking about. Yeah, Major League Pickleball, Professional Pickleball Association. Then we have Pickleball Central, which is the largest e-commerce platform that's out there that sells pickleball equipment. And then we have Pickleball Tournaments, which runs tournament software. So from viewership, we know who's watching us. We know how many watch hours. We have deals with different broadcasting networks. We have Pickleball TV, but we work with Fox, ESPN, CBS. then we have the tournaments. We know how many tournaments are being ran. And so for Utah per capita, there's more people that play in tournaments, watch pickleball, buy pickleball equipment. And yeah, that's pretty much it on that. So across the whole entire board, as we go and we go, okay, we want to go into all these different places. Utah's one where we could run a tournament every single month and it would fill up. We could bring our pros out here. We could run an amateur event and have 1,000 amateur players that play at the same time. And once again, those are about 60% men and 40% women that come and play in these events, and they're very competitive. The reason why people come and play in our events is because of the competition level that's within that. So if you want to see your at the best of your level, that's the best way to do it. A lot of people think that the viewership and like people that play are on an older demographic, and it's not true. Our viewership, the highest bracket is 24 to 35 is the highest number of viewership that we get within that. And that keeps dropping every single year. And as we have the collegiate championships that we have, the teams that are coming out here, University of Utah.
Tell me about the collegiate, just give just a brief.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
It's kind of in somewhat new, and it might be interesting. It's kind of some of the new things that are happening.
Yeah, so Utah Tech is the number one college team out of the 100 college teams that have registered to play in any kind of event. Utah Tech, so three of the top 10 are from Utah. You have Logan and or Utah State, and then you have UVU. So Utah and BYU both have not even cracked top 20, which is funny. These other teams have a better focus on the right sports with pickleball. But anyway, and that's growing. There's a lot of stuff going on with that. But Utah has like 175 members in their pickleball clubs. They're all clubs right now. They're actually not like a team. They put them as clubs. But anyway, as we evaluate the places that we go into, Utah is by far per capita the number one place to come into. And that's why we're building a facility like this. There's no other team that's built something like this, but they're all watching to see what happens with this, and they're all going to mimic it across the 22 teams that are out there. So they're all super excited. But anyway, ask us whatever questions. I have tons of data on this, and I can't thank you guys enough for your time.
Any questions about the PPA or how? Let me just talk about how this kind of fits into the corporate piece. Basically, like Brett says, there's these 22 teams, each with a sponsor city or state. This will be the facility for the Black Diamond, but 90%, 99% of the time, this will be also run as a pickleball club, which will be open to members, probably have some type of tiered membership. Everybody in the community is invited to join so that people can just come play. So the PPA and the MLP and their tournaments will be kind of a icing on the cake. It really helps us fund it. It's because it really helps with the dollars, helps with the tax dollars. The cities love it because it brings in, you know, players. So that's kind of how it fits into our strategic model. We're hopeful that this model that we're building, because it's multi-level, it can fit in a tighter location. And we hope that this will be a prototype that we'll build in all the other markets. And hopefully there'll be more than 22 at some point. But any questions on that?
What do you show on the building? Kind of lay out what
you're rendering.
Okay. Here's the site plan. Maybe we start with.
Do you want me to do this?
Yes. Russ drew these on, and he understands them. So why don't you walk through what's what and how it lays out?
All right. Yeah, I'm Russ Nader with Nichols Nader Architects. My office is just, you know, a block away. My son partner Ryan's with me here. We look at this as a pilot program that's going to be the premier facility for pickleball, you know, so far in the country. This is on the property that is bordered on the south side by the Chevrolet dealership, and Jordan Gateway, you know, kind of flows around. We're working at a piece that's six odd acres. The main building facility here turned out to be a pretty complex building. It's multi-levels. It has courts that are designed for professional players. And it incorporates a bunch of things. We have a first-class fitness facility. you know, with locker rooms and sauna and, you know, the whirlpools and that kind of stuff. And then we have other facilities we have. I'll get to the floor plans quickly, but this facility is like 166,000 square feet. And it is pretty complex because the ceiling heights and so forth for the structure had to be at all different heights. So we have basically three floors. We have a total of 47 pickleball courts. We have 15 of those that are on grade outside. And then we have 13 that actually will be on the roof. And I can run through floor plans for you quickly.
There's a question over here.
That.
How many indoor?
Let's see, 11, 13, let's see, 16 off. It's 30 somewhat.
That are indoor.
So
year round.
Yeah. Indoor, year
30
round.
30 plus year round.
Yeah.
Not quite.
And I'll
I think that's quite right. It's not quite right. I think, let's look at it with on floor plans.
Yeah,
I think that might be counting some of the rooms.
I know there's 15 here, there's 13 here, and we have a total of 47. So
yeah.
13, 15 is 28, and then subtract, you know, that from 47, and that's the total. Okay? The way the site plan lays out, we've got the credit union up here, and part of the deal here was we are in the process of purchasing, you know, the undeveloped piece from the credit union along the west side. And then we're swapping some property with them so they get a little more landscaping, and we're doing the improvements, you know, with the landscaping around the existing credit union. This area here we basically designated and hope to do multifamily housing. And I know you guys have considered, given the fact that it's close to the freeway and it's close to the tracks and so forth, that we think this is an appropriate location. You know, it's surrounded by commercial and so forth.
And that's the west side of the property.
This is the south side.
South and west.
So north is to the left on our site plan.
Okay.
We did have a hotel just by, you know, shown here. And after they did a market study, it didn't look good at all. So we've changed that out, and we're going to do additional pickleball courts. And so anyway,
the other driver of that is we felt like there's a lot of people that really like outdoor play as well as indoor play.
Yeah.
And we're kind of competing for the most courts with another facility in Florida. So we really wanted to get a few more in to be the premier facility in the world. And we really think there'll be, you know, I had kids knock on my door and play my pickleball court in my backyard all the time, even in the middle of the winter. So we think there are enough crazy people that will play almost year-round.
While I'm on the site, one of the issues we've got is obviously if we're going to have, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 fans here to watch a major tournament event, we don't have enough property that we can provide surface parking. So our plan is to have plenty of parking for day-to-day operation. We went through the calculation and came up with a requirement of like 201 parking stalls, and we've shown 274, I believe. But we need another almost 1,000 parking stalls to accommodate, you know, the crowds that we're going to get, you know, during tournament play.
Maybe we just let's just stop right there. Bryce, why don't you just, while we're on that topic, why don't you just talk about how we do that every week in, week out? Because we do that with every facility we
and that will probably be 2 or 3 times a year, tops. We'll go to these facilities, none of them. We'll go to Lifetime Fitness, for example, in Atlanta, Georgia. They bought it from the USDA. Big sunken in championship court. Their members work out there. They don't really have any parking for us. So we negotiate some parking for the pros and for the staff that run the event. But everything else is run through shuttle services that we hire from local shuttle companies.
Yeah.
And we'll look for empty lots. If it's not during school season, we'll rent it out from the public schools, or we use it from church groups that aren't using it during the week. So we'll look for a handful of lots that we can rent, ideally one or two for most places we do, and then we just hire a local shuttle service.
And we've identified a number of, you know, really large parking, you know, areas. The offices immediately west of the tracks is an ideal one that we would target to try to, you know.
I think we identified 8 properties that we could easily handle the facilities.
There's quite a few right
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah. It's really ideal.
On our side of I-15, on the South Jordan side, there's quite a few through there.
Okay. We're excited about
Let's go to the next slide.
You're just saying.
We've got the control right
on the South Jordan.
Okay.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Okay, so this basically is the ground level.
Let's see, I think we skipped one.
Did we skip one?
Yeah.
You're there.
Go back one. Let's see, go forward one.
No, that's got to be it. There you go.
That's it.
So you can see on this plan very quickly, we have, you know, main entry, food service over here. These are, you know, rest facilities and used by the VIPs. You know, this is the stadium court. So we have seating basically for like 2,000 people. Then we have what we call a championship court, which would also be, you know, has bleachers and so forth around it. And then these are all courts that are depressed with some seating around. These will all be post-tension slabs and so forth. So we're constructing, you know, to the latest standard for the courts. Their executive offices, you know, fall around the backside here. And this, I think we have eight, let's see, two, four, six, eight courts. And these are the ones that are primarily going to be used for our, you know, for our high level tournaments. And then if we go up one level.
Next page.
Got it?
There we go.
Okay, this level is only two stories. And we have our fitness center, we have, you know, facilities for aerobics and so forth. These are all of our, you know, high class locker rooms and so forth. These are our box seats that view the championship course. And then offices around the second level, and we have a broadcast booth in the corner here. And we anticipate we'll pull, you know, semi-truck, you know, on the main level and so forth for the broadcast truck. And that's where we'll do the broadcast. And I was interested this past week, they had a big tournament down in Mesa, Arizona. I watched the tournament on Fox Sports 1. And I hadn't really paid too much attention to that at this point, but I was amazed as was discussed. I mean, the women's, men's mixed doubles was pretty fantastic to watch. It's amazing how fast the ball goes, you know, back and forth over the net. But
Russ,
anyway.
One quick note on that piece. So we work with the Tennis Channel. They're a joint venture partner of ours. But this would be the first facility. I mean, you think of the Delta Center, right? Like all the cords and cameras and spots are run across that entire place. This would be the first place that would exist in pickleball. So the truck would just pull up, a broadcast truck that pulls your satellite, your feeds to someone like ESPN or Fox.
Yeah.
And we're really just plugging in a port. So this would be the first place in pickleball built ever for this. So that's really exciting for us.
Okay, go one more floor plan. This is kind of
another question over here.
Sorry, can you just go back one?
Yeah, sure.
That champion area. So is this the second level looking down on it?
Yes.
Okay. So we're up on level
two
looking down on the same court.
This area goes clear to the roof structure.
Got it.
So the bleachers, especially on this back side, go up over the top of the offices.
Got it.
And so forth.
But the other courts are two story. You've got a court on the second floor. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll show you next level.
Okay.
There it is.
And this floor kind of goes, it's about half a level up from the offices and so forth. You can see how many courts we have here. And this level actually, you know, you can have windows down into the stadium court. But all these courts are available for tournament play as well. And I think we have 11 courts. And these are all indoor courts on this level, you know, and available for, you know, private play for member use. Okay, then we go up one more level. Okay, this is the roof. And we've been working with your building official on how to make this work to be able to play on it and have a good experience. But there are 13 courts on this level that will be available for play. And we have got some rest areas and so forth. And we're having to, you know, work in caged in mechanical, all the mechanical equipment that fits up on the roof. Okay, next, right?
This is roof.
I'm going to pass these by. These are lined. Let's look at these sections. But you can kind of see here, you know, how the levels kind of intersect. And, you know, the stairs were pretty complicated on how to work out to get from level to level to level. And, you know, we have an elevator and a bunch of exit stairs and so forth. These are just a couple of, you know, quick sections. So you can see here, you know, on the stadium court here, how the bleachers come up all the way up to the back. And there's a way to kind of circulate around to the other side. Turned out to be a pretty complicated building, but we're really excited about it. This is a front view perspective, you know, kind of from the
northeast.
Yeah.
And it's worth pointing out that as you come in, this portion on the main level will be a cafe, and this outdoor seating will be outdoor dining.
Seating.
So there will be
a
cafe facility for guests to come, lunch, dinner, whatever the case may be.
And, you know, stairways down from the outside in there, and then let's go to the next one, right? This is just kind of an elevation view, so our main entry's here, and our occupant load ends up to be so big that we have to have, you know, extra exit doors and so forth from the outside. This is on the inside is kind of a seating area with, lounge seats and so forth with a big fireplace. But real contemporary looking building, we think. And this is a view from the southeast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're talking about, I liked all the windows and so forth. Our client would like to eliminate all the windows, but we're hoping.
Russ is not playing enough pickleball.
Yeah. But we're hoping we
don't want that light in your eyes when you play.
Yeah, we're hoping
we have to deal with that a little bit.
Shaded glass and so forth so that the windows aren't allowing, sunbeams to, distract play on the courts. And this is the west side and north side of the building. Okay, next. These are some interior perspectives. So this is kind of a lobby with the stairway, the exercise area up there. And then on this side is the fitness center, but real contemporary look, lots of skylights, lots of glass. So this is kind of the aerobic area that's up on the second level, and you can see the fitness on the other side of the lobby. Yeah, this is just, view. It's a pretty good sized facility, so we'll be able to accommodate, a full range of fitness equipment and so forth for members to use. This is a view of the stadium court with the bleachers, and there's bleachers on both sides here. And then the box seats are to the left.
When we hold a tournament, maybe we can talk about that just a little bit. When we do a tournament, we will often get corporate sponsors to take those boxes. When we do it in a facility that doesn't, there's some facilities we have to bring in bleachers. And everything we bring in the box.
It's very modular. I mean, we spend a lot of money bringing in local vendors to build these up, and
corporate sponsors come in basically with wheels on.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this would be the first time corporate sponsors would actually probably get what they're expecting from traditional sports.
And this room over here on this corner is where the broadcasters will be observing and broadcasting the action. Okay, next, right?
The other thing during the day that you guys should know is that's a part of this plan is having the different corporations come in, like Adobe or Larry H. Miller, that they run clinics for their employees that have
learned how to play pickleball.
Yeah, like these culture building things, and they love it just because anybody essentially can play.
This is that other championship course, so you can see the bleachers around the outside, and all these, we figured out how to make them handicap accessible. So,
let me just speak to that. Just kind of again, what maybe Bryce says. Why we have two? We have what we call a championship court and a grandstand court. Why don't you just so they kind of understand how that works?
Yeah. So Brett mentioned, 140 pro players like that we have contracted. There's more than that come out. So if we come to Utah is the highest players per capita in the nation. You're going to see more players that think they're pros. So we have a qualifying bracket, and a certain number of people will actually be admitted into the main bracket. That's how you can kind of rise in the ranks in a professional pickleball. But it's a bracket, right? So you start, and we think March Madness, there's 64 teams that narrows down. So we use 8 to 11 courts in a pro tournament to start, and then each day it kind of narrows down. But our two main courts are championship court and grandstand. So that's something in what you just saw. So those are the two main ones you see on TV, but we do broadcast all of them.
We'll broadcast all 8 courts.
You broadcast
when we do an event, all 8 will be broadcast.
Yep.
But the top players are in each time period is usually on either the championship court or the grandstand court.
I'm like a golf nerd, so if you're golf nerds, I think of the Masters. Again, to bring up that example, you can go on ESPN and you can watch certain holes. So the pickleball fanatics like Brett that want to watch each match and see who's progressing, that's the way to watch it. And then your traditional ESPN feed is that championship court feed.
Yeah, this happens to be view across from the like the main lobby, you know, to the northwest. And so these are the courts that are depressed, you know, with bleacher seating, you know, all around each one of these courts.
We want to do that so you get, so the view corridors are better rather than have a lot of fences. We put the courts down. So one, you get a view in, and two, you don't have to have the fencing that can block some of those view corridors.
I don't know if I missed this, but when you're playing pickleball and your ball goes into the next court, what do you have for divisors between the courts?
We'll have the, what you speak to, we have partial.
Partial walls. In this particular case, the way they're facing, you know, there's a solid barrier that's up 4 feet or so, and then the exterior wall here, and then we've got the bleacher seats, you know, all around. So, I mean, we'd probably end up putting, you know, a little, you know, portable fence.
We'll put partial. We won't go the whole way. We'll just do partial on the boxes on the ends.
Keep the balls. Thought that through,
You still get occasional. That's how most of the facilities are being built now.
It's happened in a pro match. We even had a pro match for a golf ball from like local golfers came through and it unchanged. It's just a perfect ball.
And it's a huge sponsorship opportunity for these local companies that are around here. They'll put up signs, they'll buy their portion. So when it's being streamed.
Those partial walls could be marketing opportunities.
Yes,
and we will end up with marketing and LED lighting and so forth, you know, on
those exterior
of these,
walls.
You know,
those pony walls, those low walls will have.
They won't be white.
It'll be all LED.
LED is shows
sound baffles. Yeah. We have sound baffle in the structure, the latest lighting that, you know, lights off the structure, so it's indirect lighting that won't, you know, shine in players, you know, eyes and so forth. I mean, really the state of the art in every aspect of this. So is that it, right? Oh no. We had the
elevations.
Yeah.
So the multi-
and we prepared some elevations for, I mean, this is just a little two-story building that sits in the parking lot. In this particular case, one of our owners has a daughter that wants to have a little salon. So that would be a proposal for that. We did come up with some perspectives, just some ideas about conceptually about what an apartment building would look like with, you know, two stories of structured parking and then apartments above. We would have some underground parking too so that we could accommodate, you know, the parking numbers that the ordinance is requiring. And obviously we understand this is kind of something that's not real popular for the council and or the planning commission, but we do think that this is a real important component in our overall plan. So we're hoping that you'll work with us, and this would be a subsequent phase. We wouldn't be doing this at the same time that we do the pickleball facility.
But let me just speak to that. What this is a critical component for us, for the financial structure, and we just think it's a good use for that last little piece of property. So our ask from the city, we're not asking for tax benefits or anything, but we really need probably three things from you. We need, as part of the development agreement, we need to address the parking issue, recognizing that we're more than self-parked, but when we do events, we'll do off-site parking. So that's kind of one issue we'll need to make sure we're all comfortable with in the development agreement. The second thing is just we would like to get the footprint of the multifamily kind of approved as part of this process, and the unit count and parking ratios. So those are the kind of things we want to make sure we can get finalized so that we can get rolling. We would like to get under construction in the next 60, 90 days, something like that. We don't know what tariffs are going to do. We're trying to figure all that out. But we would really like to go through the process as promptly as we can and move through that. But those were the things that are kind of outside the existing freeway commercial zone that are a little unique to our project. And those are kind of the asks that we have from the city. And this, we're willing to commit that we would not build this until we at least start a construction of the pickleball facility first. That's really the driver for us. That's what we're pushing for. That's what we've got these guys retained doing the drawings, and then would come back with the multifamily after that's up and rolling.
Now, this multifamily, is it going to be owner occupied or
rental? It would be a rental product. It'd be a rental product and
apartments.
Apartments. 205 units is what's shown here, and 250 stalls, subsurface. Our goal would have this building's totally self-parked, so that they're segregated, nested parking. In the event of when we do our tournaments, we'll obviously have some impact on this facility's parking, but that's why we want to make sure that it's nested, controlled. People aren't pulling in there and stealing a renter's parking spot. So that's got to be kind of separately nested and separately parked.
Are you planning on holding any of these units back for participants in the pickleball?
I don't know. We're not that far along yet. We're already getting people asking about them. It's like, we got to build them first. But we think that there's really some synergy between the pickleball facility as an amenity package for the apartments, and the apartments as a nice housing component for people that want to be close to that kind of facility.
Or the Black Diamonds facility, or players would also be in.
Players.
The six players that play for Utah Black Diamonds, it makes sense, and a couple of the staff and coaching them right there.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's, quickly our concept.
Any questions on us, the project, specifics?
How many stories on the multifamily?
Well, it would be a total of seven, two parking and five apartments.
But one of the parking is underground?
Yeah.
So six stories above?
Yeah.
And what's the height?
Well, you're showing two above ground.
It's two above ground. It's two above ground,
yeah. But we do have one level of underground, Kathy.
So one underground parking, two above parking, and then five.
So it's
seven stories.
Seven above ground.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the height?
Which means it can't be a wood structure.
It's roughly like 70 feet.
Non-combustible construction.
The pickleball itself is like 50 feet.
Start buying the steel now.
Well, have I got my fingers crossed with our new president putting tariffs on steel and aluminum.
Yeah, we saw it go up about 10 cents a pound this morning.
Question.
Yeah.
The building that's right nearby, the Noah's, how tall is that in perspective?
Yeah, I'll bet you it's not this tall.
It's like
three stories, but they are pretty big stories.
Right. Looking at the
floor to floor.
Yeah.
Good question. I'm not sure how tall it is. We have met with them. They're thrilled about it.
Oh yeah,
because your other facility would wrap around them, correct? That other building.
The building's kind of in front of it.
Off the side or something.
This would be on the one side, and then the courts would be on the other. If you go back, it's kind of a U shape.
Now it's a church, but we all refer to it as the Noah.
That's
Noah.
Yeah.
We have met with the Awakening Group that has that out of San Diego. We've met with them and. They're thrilled. They want to
hopefully lease parking spots.
Yeah.
Too.
Well, they want probably some synergy for their facility too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they do some events. They haven't been doing as much lately, but they do some event things. So we think it's kind of real synergistic. They seemed great. We've met obviously with the credit union. We shared an access with the I can't remember his name right now. The financial. Lot one.
That's what
you can.
Yeah, and originally our plan went through there, and we shared that access. But with this new playout, that left turn was always a little problematic for us. Didn't work great. So we think this is a little bit better plan.
Close to the tracks and on the radius. Yeah.
Yeah, the radius and the tracks made it so that was a little problematic.
So is that gray line on the bottom the road that accesses the church now? Where's the road that accesses?
The white space right there. Yes.
Okay.
They'll have their own separate access. We decided it didn't make sense to do cross access. They have access to the road. We have access to the road. So we hope down the road we'll share parking. On when they have events, they can use ours. And when we have events, we can use theirs.
So where would your major access be? Sorry.
Up here.
Off of the Jordan.
Oh, off the Jordan. Okay.
Lines
so
right up with
around.
The entry across the street. Yeah.
We will need to do some work on that. The traffic study showed that we'll need to do some work on that median. To allow for a left in. That's something we'll come back to you with, that traffic study. And the traffic study also did a parking analysis for us, and it also helped identify places where we could park during tournaments. So that'll be an important component that'll tie into with the development agreement, I'm sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, just getting back to the apartments, you know, one thing that I'd like to maybe talk about is, what would it look like if instead of apartments, you made them condominiums, and you're able to hold some back, you sell some, but you're able to hold some back that you can, you know, rent out to people that are coming in using the facility. I know you checked out a hotel doesn't necessarily pencil, you know, for you, but you could have some that you sell to people so they're owner occupied, but then you have some for, you know, when people come in, you say, you know what, we have condos here that you can rent, you know, on a nightly basis, weekly basis, wherever they're going to be out there for. Maybe you have some for the, you know, the, is it Black Diamonds. Yeah, Black Diamonds, whatever else. What about that?
I think we'll look at that for sure. Okay. I think all of those uses make sense. Yeah. I think that's something
that I would like to see.
Yeah. Condominiums are a little harder to finance. Condominiums are a little harder to finance, and so we'd have to figure out how we'd structure that. But I think
you guys are smart. You'll figure it out.
I think we do want a multifamily component, though. So, I mean, I don't want to kid you. We want a multifamily component.
Yeah.
Is an important part of it.
If I can, if the ownership component is a make or break, that's good to know now. We're dealing with that with another project, right? This idea of rental versus owner-occupied, and if that is something that is a priority, it's good for the applicant to know now. If we get all the way down the road and come back to council, and that is still a sticking point, it would be good to know.
And I can put on the table, it's a sticking point for us. It's very critical that we have that to make everything work. So
if I could
dovetail
on what he's saying, we as a council typically know, almost emphatically, would prefer owner-occupied over rental. The reason for that is owner-occupied people behave different in our city than renters, typically. Does that make sense?
Sure.
They tend to invest, they tend to volunteer, they tend to, you know, put their
roots in.
They're vested. So I would agree with Patrick. I'd love to see you consider the concept. I mean, I'm trying to contain myself from jumping up and down. I play pickleball. I love pickleball. I have been for 8 years advocating on this council for more pickleball. Everybody's on board now, but in the beginning, I was the only lone voice saying we need more pickleball. So the fact that you said we have more pickleball per capita than any state, I'm so thrilled to hear that because I'm completely on board. So, but the owner-occupied piece, if you could pull that off,
we will look at, but I don't want to have commitment that we can do that because it's a totally different world, and we really want to get the pickleball thing up and rolling. So we will look at all those options, but if it's a condition, we can't do the project. I mean, we can't commit to owner occupied. It's just too complicated. We've got too many other issues to address. We think there's an opportunity to do this, but it's a critical component. It's really critical that we get this. The land here is very unique. The location is unique. One of the reasons we want to be here is we love the idea that there's a freeway off-ramp on both ends. We love the fact that it's close to 15. We think our trade area will be, you know, will people be able to get here? You know, Brett and I live down in Lehigh. We can get to this location really quickly to play. We think we'll capture people from Davis County to Salt Lake County, much beyond that. We think a 35 to 40 minute drive time is not out of the question here.
It's also should be mentioned that it's one of the rare pieces of property that doesn't have a height limitation on the zone, so it plays in our favor.
Yeah, your zoning doesn't have a height limitation. So that's why we want to do it. But I get where you're saying from owner occupied, but I'm just not sure we can commit. We can't commit to that.
I don't think we're asking you to commit, but it's...
Yeah, we will look at that. Absolutely. We'll look at every option for that corner of the property. Absolutely.
So, if I may, I just want to kind of recap that this facility would be the premier pickleball facility in the world.
The world.
And it would be home to Utah's professional pickleball team and would host global professional championships. But it would also have... a membership a membership that any of us could join and go work out, go play pickleball, whatever, any of our neighbors, any of our residents. So this is such a benefit. They're not asking for any tax increment. They're not asking for any help financially putting this in, and they want to break ground in 60 days. I think I am really hopeful that we get this here in South Jordan. Actually, the first time I got to visit with Wade about this, how long has it been, 4 or 5 months ago?
Yeah.
When he came in and proposed this and looking at renderings, and then I went to a pickleball tournament, a professional pickleball tournament, and I watched it and I learned about it and I viewed it, and I was even so inspired, I did play for the first time. I had this funny surgery on my foot is the reason I have never played. I'm like, I don't think I can do it. I loved it. I played with my 5-year-old grandson, but he loved it. We had fun. Our kids were like owning pickleball, and we were doing the 5-year-old and grandma version of it, but it was fun. And there are so many reasons why I think this would be a huge benefit to our city. I think we need, honestly, something like this on the east end of South Jordan. I believe we do. There's been a lot of focus on what's happening on the west end, and we've had residents say, how come everything's happening out west? This is a great location. It's right off I-15. I think this is such a benefit to the city, and I think other areas would jump at the chance to have this.
We've had a community in Texas offer to build it and give it to us, so well, I overspoke. We had to pay a dollar a year.
Ryan Smith even wanted in.
Yeah. Ryan Smith approached us about it. But we think this is a right location. We really want to work with you on it. And I appreciate the mayor's enthusiasm, because we sure are enthused about it.
I would really like, we passed the PD overlay zone. You guys voted for the PD overlay zone in this area that would allow a project like this or other projects similar to have the housing component, to have that multifamily housing component in this area right off of I-15. Now, I firmly stand with the need for owner-occupied housing. We need it. We need owner-occupied, and truth be told, it's been more than 2 years since we've been approached about an owner project. We get a lot of projects pitched to us, and no one has been pitching anything that would be owner-occupied for a long time. And with the challenges that we face, the massive growth, being one of the 10 fastest-growing cities in America, the constant change that we have, and the need for housing that any of our kids can afford, we're not moving that needle with rentals. We're not. It's our reality, and it's what we're up against. And so my perspective on that hasn't changed at all. For this project, I'm very supportive of what this looks like. I would like to see you do the analysis. I'd like to know, are condos an option? Because there's a market and there's a need.
There's so many buyers.
Yeah. I have kids, I know, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a demand and there's, yeah.
But I don't
and I'm getting to the I'm getting to where I'd like to own a place right there.
That's starting to sound really good to me.
Sandy, where they really want them. That's just what it is.
So I agree with all that's been said. I would way prefer to see owner occupied than rental, but I just saw our affordable housing plan, read through that, and according to that plan, we actually need more rentals as well, if I read it right. And there's a lot of rentals right in that neighborhood. You know, I mean, right across the tracks is a big rental project. Right north on South Jordan Gateway, big rental. You know, it's not
along that corridor.
Yeah, it's all along that corridor. It's not, I mean, owner occupied would actually be out of character for the area.
I agree with that.
Well, I mean, you look at the properties that are there, they're all rentals, you know? And I'm just saying, I don't want to throw a condition on it that's going to move the project. I would rather see rentals go in there and the project than not the project, you know? So, and I absolutely would rather see owner occupied.
I feel similar to Don that, you know, yeah, preference is owner occupied, but like the mayor was also saying, you know, our last city council meeting, if I remember right, is when we just redid the ordinance to allow multi-housing and to bring economic development into this neighborhood. And that's exactly what this project does. So I'd be in favor of how the project is now, but I would prefer there be, you know, an owner occupancy element to it. So if there can be condos and, you know, majority of them, you know, owned, but if you guys held on to some to lease back out to players or staff, or whatever you guys feel you need as a, you know, kind of, wait, whatever you're going to take for the apartment share and held on to those or something, that would be fine. But, or if you knew, okay, we're going to have tournaments, we have to at least have some of these as Airbnbs, whatever type thing. But yeah, owner occupancy would be my preference, but I wouldn't want to lose the project considering we just passed an ordinance to allow housing into this neighborhood for economic development reasons.
You do have to remember that, yeah, you're right. This is a freeway commercial zone, you know, in the end of the day, and everything around it is still, this would be one of the only really commercial, I mean, residential projects in a fairly commercial
which
area.
Which I think is why I would be okay with it, because it isn't in a neighborhood, it's not even near a neighborhood. And I think this area, I mean, we've always talked about, and we have lots of residents say, if you're going to do any kind of multifamily housing, put it in the right area. Put it along the freeway. Put it, that's what this is. And it isn't, no one owns a single
not
family home in the area, you know. So, but see, this isn't a neighborhood.
I know,
there's no neighborhoods by it. You know what I mean? And that's why I'm okay with it.
Well, actually, just for cross track, there's whole bunch of apartments right there.
Right.
So
that's
like the neighborhood.
Owner-occupied, single-family kind of neighborhoods.
Even townhomes,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that
right
they're,
there.
They're closer to 106.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Thank you. You can see how that fits into the...
Oh, thank you. That
yeah, so it's kind of surrounded on all sides by commercial, so that's why we thought it.
But aren't those so condominiums?
Do you have a laser? Do you have a laser?
No, we don't.
On the left side.
So this is the NOAA's, that's the church,
yes.
Right?
Right.
And
so
what is this over here?
So these are small lot. There's a gate here. It's
yeah.
Like a, I don't think it's a retirement, but it's they're small lot single family. This is the Sterling Village.
Yeah.
Apartments, and then there's single family here, and then these are apartments as well. These are townhomes, but they are all rentals.
Wow. Okay.
So rentals would fit into the character of
yeah,
what's there.
That's true. I would totally concur. We love the. I mean, I love the idea. This is like exciting off the charts.
And they're not asking for any tax increase.
Yes. And so, obviously, our temperature for rentals is not as high as it would be for single family.
Yeah. I mean,
could you look into it?
Because
yeah, we will. And I, we've got some people we're talking to that can help us with that. So we'll look at that.
But I
think it's an uphill battle. I know I'm not up to speed currently. I'm quasi-retired now. Thankfully.
Playing pickleball.
but I know historically the challenge has been tort issues with condominiums, and I don't know if that issue has been resolved. It might have been. I need to get caught up to speed with some experts.
We're not a heavy construction defect state, but from the tort protect.
So I know that's been a hurdle that I've always felt, man, we got to get over that because we need owner occupied units. You know, we need them bad.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of places they could go, but I know that's been a hang up in the past historically.
I know from the standpoint of an architect, my liability insurance carrier just freaks out if I propose to do, you know, condo projects because they're just notorious for, you know, getting together as a homeowners association or whatever. And filing suit against contractors and architects.
So I know that's a hurdle, and I don't know, I'm not up to speed on currently. I was a little more current on that in the past when I was more engaged on a daily basis, but I we'll go back and look at that because I would love to do that if we figure out a way to make it work. But I think it would be very challenging.
Among all that we're tracking up at the Hill right now, was there any legislation actually done to change? Condos. There's supposed to be legislation around condos, but
nothing hasn't passed yet. They're still being amended and in flux.
any of them really addressing?
Not the way that we keep asking cities way, yeah, for them to, because the answer continues to be there's only so much in our control. There's funding challenges. There's federal legislation challenges that make funding condos hard.
Yeah,
and that's why developers.
So we still haven't got that help that we've been pleading for from the state.
It's kind of a bigger issue.
Yeah, that's what it's just wanted.
Historically, it's been a bigger issue. I can't speak to it. That's a bigger. And then the other issue for us is this a location where people want to own, or is this a location where people want? Because of in more commercial nature, I tend to believe it would be harder for sales than it would be for.
I still go back to the. We just approved an ordinance to allow multifamily housing apartments in this neighborhood for economic development. And that's exactly what this project has, and I can accept the project how it is.
Oops, good point. Do you want to switch to?
Yeah, I'd like to hear what you have to say.
You know what? Good points. Really good points. Looking at this map helps me a lot, like wrap my head around the fact that if it was all rentals, I would still applaud the project. And your point is well made. I mean, there is a lot of rental around there. So if you can't move the needle, I still would support the project too. I would agree with Mr. McGuire.
First time in 7 years.
That's what pickleball does. That's what pickleball does. Brings people together.
Before we hear from Mr. Harris, Mr. Priest has a comment.
Just something to think about in this whole condo versus apartment thing is one of the things I've always gone back to in my years of experience is you're talking about a building of this size and magnitude, and if it's apartments, you've got one owner who, and especially in this case where they've got a big investment, if they have a problem tenant, they're going to get rid of them. Versus if you have condos in this situation, you've got a homeowners association, you've got somebody that's an owner, and if somebody's a problem, you don't have somebody that can just say you're violating the rules, get out. And it's much harder to deal with 205 or whatever it is owners than it is one owner that's responsible for 205 apartments.
Well,
and that's one of the things that I felt in this case. You know, I'm all about homeownership. But I think when you're talking townhomes, you're talking regular traditional, totally all over that. But in this case, if I was to live next to something, I would rather it be an apartment building, personally, than it be a condo. Just something to think about.
And nothing stops condo owners from then renting them out.
That's true. That's true. And the litigation piece of the residents getting together and suing the HOA, we've seen that in our city. Yeah. So
before we return to Mr. Harris, on the apartment complex, are you guys looking at holding on to the ownership and running the apartments yourself, selling them off to someone else to
own? We're not that far along yet. We're really so focused on the pickleball. I will tell you, the Pardo family does have investments in apartments. They're a large apartment owner, developer. To my knowledge, they haven't sold anything that they've built.
And anything's possible. 10 years from now.
Beyond the programming we're doing now, that's as far as design programming and parking programming, that's as far as we've really gone, because we want to get these guys something to play some pickleball in.
Yep. So are you Black Diamond?
I'm not very good.
No.
You're being him.
They're the president of the Utah Pickles.
Am I a Black Diamond player?
Yes.
Oh, no, I'm not a player. I'm terrible at pickleball, but no, I help with them.
He just runs the business.
He's like that.
And just so you know, there was 37,000 people in Utah are in Salt Lake County that played in a pickleball tournament in the last 2 years.
37,000.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those.
In a tournament, yeah.
Yeah, we get Utahns to travel to Vegas, to California.
Yeah, you'd be shocked how many people are going to St. George in a couple weeks to play in that tournament. They go to California to play in tournaments.
And there's no good pickleball tournament location in Utah.
Yeah, you've been running in the Salt Palace last year where you guys came out. That is extremely difficult for us to do.
Expensive.
And this is only two times a year, so people can get the experience of playing on... Like, even if you go, and I'm not trying to bash on other pickleball courts that are around here, But like other indoor pickleball courts, they've been made from Lowe's, or they've been made for something else. They have bad bounces on them. They have that, like, this is all state of the art. It's going to be the best pickleball that you can play. And like, and if you heard the community of pickleballers, because Connor's sent out these renderings across Facebook pages, people are so excited to see what happens with this across the country. And people in Australia, people in China, people in England, they're watching to see what happens with this facility. Right. So it will be built.
We can't vote, Tamer. We just want to vote.
Please, Mr. Harris.
Yeah, you know, I'm favorable to the project. You know, I think we get a lot of people that come here. South Jordan, I mean, all of Utah, but especially South Jordan, you know, land's very valuable here. And people can make a lot of money on rentals. And I personally have an issue when someone's wanting to just build a rental product and they're not providing anything else, and they're trying to just absolutely maximize the returns, and they're not providing anything else. With what you're doing, you're providing, you know, all this pickleball. You're providing something to the community. And that's, and my challenge to this council is we need to pay close attention to that because every single person that developer comes to us says, it needs to be rental. It needs to be rental. That's the only way we can pencil it. Well, I don't buy it. But what I will buy is that you guys are bringing something into our city with the pickleball and say, hey, as it goes along with it, that's where it becomes a little bit more palatable to me. I don't buy that the whole area has to be rentals and something else that's not rentals that's not compatible. I don't subscribe to that either. But neither do the residents in District 1. But I think the residents District 1, when they see this, you know, this pickleball here, along with the complete package, can get their arms wrapped around it.
That's well said.
Yeah.
That's well said. Thank you. Mr. Shelton.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the energy and the creativity and the excitement that this is going to bring, I think, to the east side of our city. And I'm excited to see this go forward, and I definitely prefer ownership, but I prefer the project over anything. And so I want to see you make it happen here, and I'm just delighted that you're not asking for the city to open up our pocket and contribute to this in some way.
Because guess what? We have $0 to contribute. We really don't.
Yeah. Poor Dustin's already getting a migraine.
The mayor told me, you guys got all kinds of money. The mayor told me you guys are just flush.
We moved you up and switched the agenda because this was going to be the more fun part than the budget conversation. So, yeah.
Why we're still in good boots.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm very supportive about this.
Mrs. Johnson, what do you think?
I'm very supportive. In fact, you may even want to look at Lifetime Fitness here doesn't have this program, but they have a program where they have their fitness centers built around housing. So you may want to look, I don't know if you've already looked into their model, but that might give you some ideas also on how to structure the rental
community. Yeah, we work with Lifetime and Invited clubs, like, because we go there and go to their facilities, so we work with their owners, we know them very well, we've talked to them about this and different projects they're bringing to Utah. It's pretty cool. So that's a great idea
to look at. Yeah,
well, it sounds like everybody's excited about this facility the way I had a hunch everybody would be. I really was excited to reach this point where you were ready and had a project ready to come share. I mean, that's what we were waiting on, you know, just for all the ducks to be in a row for you to have a project to come and share. We'd like to be invited when you break ground or whatever.
Absolutely.
It is, you know, we'd like to be there because this is a big deal, and we're grateful that you chose South Jordan. We're proud to have this come here, and you'll find that we're a really good city to work with. We have a really good council and a really good staff.
I concur.
I concur.
And Tamara wants you to send her an early release on
membership. Send her the membership info now.
I'm not Black Diamond, but I love to play.
So for the
we'll see if you make the brackets, Tamara.
You might even want to send her a form for Xander Real Estate TV endorsement.
Yeah.
So you guys, I had dinner. I was in St. George for just a day and a half. I went to the Parade of Homes 2 weekends ago. And we went to dinner at Sakura, and they had this TV on in the waiting room, whatever. It's the first time I've ever seen pickleball being broadcast. I knew it was. I knew it was being shown. I don't have a lot of time to sit down and watch TV. I was lucky to catch, like, part the second half, the good half of the BYU game recently, the basketball game, but I don't get to watch much. So I was there, and they were showing it at dinner in St. George, and I went, I know who cares about this. I know who these people are. And it was fun to see it on TV and to see it broadcast that way. People were watching
when
it.
When is St. George? 2 weeks?
No, four. Yeah, that's four, right. The 28th of that weekend of March.
Red Rock Open in St. George is going to be on a national broadcast. Who's broadcasting?
I think that one's Fox Sports again.
I think it is Fox Sports. That'll be a national broadcast on Fox Sports. We'll kind of highlight the St. George area. But that's if you're gonna set your DVR and record and watch one, that's kind of
awesome. Do you guys need any other information from us, Stephen? Do you need anything else from us?
No, the conversation was good. I know the residential was important to have. So thank you for having that conversation. That gives us some good direction to work with them through remaining issues. 60 to 90 days, it makes me quake a little bit.
That's
very
so
aggressive.
Far ahead of the game.
Yeah.
I'm
also
tonight.
Saying that too.
But we'll bring this forward to Planning Commission first and then back to you in the zoning context, and then they'll need site plan and building permit approval.
Thank you.
Can I ask one
Thank you, everybody. You bet.
Your short timeline, is there some goal date that you're trying to hit? I'm just curious.
Is there
a tournament you're wanting to house here?
We still got
2027.
Our CEO wanted to hold one in 2026, fall of 2026. My construction people are telling me that's not feasible.
Yeah. This is an 18-month, two-year build.
He doesn't give up easy, though, so we'll see how that arm wrestle goes.
Yeah, twist my arm.
But we're, I mean, 18 to 20 months, 4 months.
Yeah.
I was pushing 18, maybe 24, we'll just have to see.
I keep saying how complicated
it's a complicated building, but we would like to, as soon as we know what the timeline is going to be and it gets solidified, we'll program an event here.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, just as absolutely soon as we can.
But it'll be a year-round facility.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
You'll have tournaments, but you'll have players there all the time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but you'll have, like, date nights on Friday. You'll have duper ranking, so you can get your duper ranking up. Like, you'll have those corporate activities where corporations are coming in and learning how to play pickleball games.
I'm
going to
start practicing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a duper rating?
This is a very refreshing.
Do you have a duper rating?
No, not yet. I
yeah, thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you for all the due diligence into preparing to come here. This is a very refreshing pitch. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, so excited.
Thank you
so
much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
it. Oh, yeah, she said we'll say hello. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot. Wade's wife Lisa and I met at the pickleball tournament, and now we're like friends. No, we're like we don't hang out. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Four.
Get out of that.
31 minutes.
I don't want to be tall.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Oh,
one of those walls.
Ryan Luce.
No, I don't. And I'm starting to hear from my sister.
I'm
starting to. We both know which one's better. I thought the comments were excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Kate, thank you. Keep in touch.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. I'm not sure where she went, and Mr. Shelton had to step out for just a minute. He said he would be back.
So
I'm thinking that if they suck up all our rental units, then everything else has to be single family.
For sale.
Or on Rock Bank.
Yeah. We can just say we've met our quota.
Just can check the box on the housing plan.
The MIHP. They also, in the housing legislation, there's a couple of big housing bills, you know, that are not through yet. They're still underway.
Painful.
But there's also, for the first time ever, some provisions in there that under certain circumstances, cities could require that if you want this zoning, it has to be owner-occupied. That's never existed. So I'm hoping we get that across the finish line because it'd be helpful to have some kind of tool.
Yeah.
Oh, Ryan is who I was looking for. No, I just was like, I wonder if you were here. Were you able to connect on that phone call? We're good. Thank you. All right. Well, now we're moving our SWAT E1 and E2, and we're going to have our budget meeting number two.
Well, I wish I could say that we were planning to spend $12.5 million to build pickleball courts all over the city. This is one of my favorite parts of the budget process when we get to talk about our capital improvement plans and the fleet, because this part of the budget is the part that really does tie to almost every single one of our strategic priorities that we do as a city. And if you think about where we're headed in a community, when we talk about safe community, you know, we have to have good roads that we can drive on. We have to have good equipment and trucks and things to drive on those roads to provide the services. You know, reliable public infrastructure, that's what this is all about, is building all the things that we need. Desirable amenities in the open space. Nobody wants a road with a bunch of potholes in it. Economic development. We have to be able to get people in and out of our city. We have to allow commerce to move. Sustainable growth. We have to manage how we do things for the long term. It's not just build it now and forget it. It's build it and then plan to maintain it. And fiscally responsible governance. So this part of our budget process ties to a lot of things. Our team's been working to put together the CIP plan for this year. As they sat down to do that, they knew that the pot of money that we would have to work with is not very large this year. It's about $12.5 million. That includes some one-time transfer of about $1 million from the CDA. The rest of it comes from things like the Class C funds and transportation sales tax, things that we have just limited amounts that come to us. As they looked at that pot, they focused on how do we really put the most efficient use of that money toward our maintenance. I've heard you guys say time and time again, we don't want to just kick the can down the road. If things need to be fixed and repaired, if preventative maintenance needs to be done, let's make that a priority. We want to complete projects that have been started or that are part of ongoing projects. You know, we spend certain portions of money each year to work towards a total overall project. You might remember like the replacement of the transact pipe in the water system. It was a project that took a number of years to get it to completion. So we want to stay on track with some of those ongoing projects that we need to fund. And the last priority that they had to work with was figuring out how we could do the grant matches for some of the funding that we get from state and federal levels that require a match on our part. We want to be able to leverage our funds in the most fiscally responsible way that we can. So if we can get a $500,000 grant, but we have to match it, well, that's a way of doubling our money. So those were the priorities that the team worked with as they looked at putting together this CIP list for this year. You're probably going to ask, well, what about the projects that didn't make the list? Well, they stay in that five-year CIP plan. The ones that don't make the cut this year get pushed back and will get reprioritized in next year. And then we add that next year and we keep that five-year outlook rolling forward all the time. So what you have tonight and what I sent you earlier at the end of last week is this year's tentative plan. And I've got Sunil and Brad and Jay, Ray and Dawn, who worked with the rest of the team to pull this together. If you want to go through and talk about any of it, I will let them talk about the process. I'll let them talk about what they're seeing as far as project costs go, where we're seeing increases in the cost of materials, you know, to to do surface overlays and things. All
this
of those,
is a very sexy project.
All of those things go up, right?
There's not even anything exciting on this. It's all important.
So, yeah, basically we took every penny that we had and we matched it to those priorities, and we're bringing forward a very balanced budget as to this is the money we have. This was our recommendation for the absolute best way to spend it, based on all of their expertise. So I know we don't have a lot of time, but are there specific things you want to talk about? Do you want to hear specifically from some of the members of the team how this come together? Is there anything on that list that you're just going, what the heck is this? Or why was this prioritized above something else?
On page 2, under transportation sales tax, there's the trail extension from 118th to 114th. Isn't there already a trail there?
This is the Utah Lake Distributing
there
Canal.
There is Welby Jacob, which is the one by us.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
This is
the one that's further east.
Ah, thank you.
And
we've completed Welby Jacob pretty much, except for one little section. We don't have property, but so this was the next trail down. The problem is we had money budgeted last year too, but that canal company is holding us up and giving us permission to do this. And so we're actually Saturday, I think we're trying to get with our shares in there, get a board member on there, and hopefully can turn the table and get them to work with us.
You're going political, huh?
We are going political, indeed.
And if I remember right, this is a grant match, right? So we're leveraging our funds.
We would be applying for grants. Last year we applied and we did not receive grants. So
yeah, we can either move ahead with the money and do portions or apply it to a grant or both. So
okay. My other question was at the bottom, trail maintenance, pavement preservation maintenance of city-managed trails. Is there a specific area that we have a problem with?
We have a regular trail maintenance program, and so we just budget about $40,000 to $50,000 a year do what needs to happen.
So there's not specific.
The trails are rated just like our roads are, and so we work through it.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Super smart.
I remember a couple of years ago, we did all that work down on the Jordan River Trail and had all that nice new black asphalt,
yes.
So there were no cracks. That's part of that ongoing.
And then you ride your bike into the next town, and it doesn't feel as nice.
Absolutely. That next section of trail.
So they'll just knock off the next highest priorities on our trails that they've already mapped and identified with that money.
And we've been budgeting $40,000 a year, and then about every other year or so, when we build that up enough to make it worth to go do something.
Right.
So,
good question.
Thank you.
I know the Bingham Creek Trail has had an area where it's washed out quite a bit. It seems like there's groundwater or something.
Which section? I walked that quite a bit myself.
That's
north or south of Sky.
Yeah, it's actually north of Sky Drive, but between Sky Drive and West Jordan, there's an area in there that's
below the
homes.
Yeah, and there's some sections that, and we've talked about that. We probably need to come in and fix some of those that are depressed. I don't know why they've sunk. I know what you're talking about.
Give them some therapy. Just go talk to them.
Yeah. But that's one thing. I know we did do a HA5 treatment on that couple years ago, and then they came in and Ray's crews came in and masked the cracks.
Been down there for a while because I've been mostly up in the park. But I know when I was going down there, there was an area, just a short area, that seemed to wash out quite a bit.
Yeah, I know there's some areas sunk, if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, that.
Or depressed as Tammy.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
We can follow up and let the guys go take a look and see where that is. You'll see things on there like tank cleaning. I know we're doing that right now with one of our tanks. There's still just a day or two left if you want to go on a tour and see the inside of that tank.
I went. It's so cool.
It's fun, isn't it?
It's fun. There's that one in West Jordan.
It's the one in West Jordan.
Field.
It's
yeah.
That one.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So if you want a chance to go inside, Ray's still doing tours, I think, through the end of the week.
Do it. It's fantastic.
It's a neat experience. Mm-hmm.
Sign me up for one.
Yeah. Just send me an email sometimes at work for you.
When I'm free?
Yeah.
Just tell me when I need to go.
We went through, we really scrutinized the request for fleet vehicles. We're maintaining our rotation schedules and the maintenance schedule so that we can have the most efficient use of our funds. So kudos to Sunil and Don and the team for staying on top of that. I don't know if you had any questions about that.
Has that worked out pretty good? I mean, you switched over to the trucks versus those, the chargers that we had before there. It seems like they, when you sell them, they have a better value when you turn around and resell them.
Is, they is have it a much better resale value on
it,
the trucks.
Has it been a financially good move for us to roll the trucks?
The resale value is better than
yes,
for sure.
And the morale of the officers, it's much
better
more
for
comfortable for our people, for their equipment.
It might be more attractive too if they're in a truck all day versus in a car.
Yeah, just all the constant in and out.
Yeah.
And how they store their equipment, their presence, they sit higher, they have a better view of traffic. It's
all around better.
Yeah, so that's been a huge plus.
Easier on their knees too.
100%.
It's good for recruitment.
Yeah. Make the difference.
I mean, it checks the boxes all the way down.
Better in the winter, probably.
So I don't know. Is there anything else?
I just want to say thank you for always staying on top of this. One thing that we really are proud of in this city, and we as elected officials are able to speak to this often, is that it's a priority to us to maintain. We're not going to let our infrastructure go to pot and be so far past maintenance that it's going to cost residents an inordinate amount of money to even get them back up to speed.
Yeah.
And so I joke, this isn't a sexy list. But it's not, right? It's streets. This
it's
is important
practical.
Work. It's very practical. And it's, so today I was talking to another mayor when I was at the Capitol, and she's the mayor of Alpine. And she said, anything that comes up that costs cities money, we're such a small community. We just don't have any extra money, and so it's very stressful. She goes, we're not like you guys in a big city with your big budgets. And I laughed and I said, we don't have any money either. We don't have any money. And she goes, come on. No, she did not buy it. She was like, you guys are so big. I'm like, we haven't raised taxes for our general fund since the 1900s. I'm like, no, we literally don't have any money. So to take this money and to be as prudent with it, and this is what fiscal responsibility is. And I appreciate this list and everything that went into it.
Well, the kudos goes to these department heads for all of the hours and time that they've spent scrutinizing. They have technical teams that get together. The department heads get together. They spend a lot of time working this out for the best of
us. I would like to ask one question. Back when we used to write out our goal, our CIP, you know, vision board on the whiteboard and go, you know, what are the projects? What can we narrow it to? Whatever. We used to talk about like the off ramp from I-15 and doing a little bit of landscaping there. There's a brand new off ramp in Washington County, in Washington City, brand new off of I-15. Main Street just opened recently, barely. And it has the same lovely rock landscape, lovely as the exit. I'm like, why does this look so finished and so nice? Who pays for that? Is it still Washington City paying for that? Is the county paying for that? Because my understanding was that's on us if we want any nice landscaping there coming off the I-15 exits. And we've never had the money to do it. And I keep seeing that happen in southern Utah. And I'm like, what is the give here? How does that happen? And I'm wondering who has an answer for that.
It's different. Unless they're doing something different down there. If we try to do something here, they would charge us a betterment for it, and we'd have to enter an agreement that we maintain it also, because their landscaping. This really upset me a few years ago. They developed the policy UDOT did on landscaping, and they did not reach out to any cities. They just said, "Hey, we developed this. Here you go," and it really is still a sore point to me that today. I bring it up whenever I get a chance. But
I can testify I've seen him bring it up.
isn't their idea of landscaping just
they call it a native seed mix, which is weeds.
Well, I would even take the rocks that they've done in southern. It's beautiful. It's really quite lovely, and it's all dryscaped. It's not. There's no water to it at all. It's quite lovely. I'm like, that would look a lot better than what we have, which is nothing.
Well, you see it in Vegas, you see it down in the Phoenix area. I've noticed the same thing. I don't know
like I said,
I'm asking because it's in Utah. It's another city in Utah with a brand new one. I'm like, okay, this I wonder if it's not different just region rare. Director. This is what we see. I'm just wondering.
Policy.
Could be slightly that. My guess is somebody paid a betterment for it. I don't know who, if it's the city or the county.
Well,
or
maybe the county has an ordinance or something that says if there's anything like that, it has to be nice. And so whoever it is, you have to budget that into your budget. I don't know.
Well, we could pass something like that.
They do have fewer off-ramps down there.
I might ask Carlos about it, honestly. So
I would love to see our ramps better. That'd be so nice. Could you drive in on our major corridor and all our off and on ramps are ugly along
yes,
the freeway?
Yes, and I agree with 100%. Just can't not notice how nice they look down there. And I'm like, this one's brand new, and it's still nice already. It was part of the finishing, so I just wondered. Okay.
I wanted to leave Sunil a few minutes if there were any specific items. Because if we don't need to have our budget session later this month, if we can wrap up any of those things that he needs as he's looking to put things together, that would save us having to come back at the end of the month for budget meeting number 3.
One more question I can do
before. Okay.
I just am looking at her mulligans, $150,000 for a new rental pavilion. It wasn't just a few years ago, we spent a lot of money to update the mulligans. Why do we have to build a new rental pavilion when we already did a huge renovation?
Because we don't have one.
This is
so,
this would be outside.
This is actually an amenity that our customers mount there. When they have birthday parties and all those kinds of things, there's nothing there for them to really gather under. Mm. So this would be a pavilion that, if I'm right, is just to the east of the existing clubhouse, which extends the capability of us to be able to host more events.
There's
things.
A concrete pad there now with a few picnic tables.
We've tried to
not.
Do some other things, but it hasn't been sufficient. So this actually increases the capacity of the venue.
So when you say rental pavilion, we're not renting things. It's a pavilion that can be rented.
Correct. Yes. So like
oh,
if you're
okay.
doing your birthday party
like,
there and you're going to do...
Oh,
then that would
saying.
That
got
would
it.
Allow
yes,
the
yes,
kids
yes.
to have.
No, I see what you're saying. Before, I was like, "Why are you taking it out to another facility? This is
no,
stupid."
No, no. This is us
okay.
adding
this is
a
rentable,
so you're
a highly requested
a place
amenity.
Like Glenmore, where they've got that patio out to the side.
Exactly.
So
you
the
can have a caterer come in and
do the like the roof and the. It's open.
It would be open.
It would be open.
Okay.
So it'd be similar to like what we've built in some of our parks. It's just this one's going to be highly.
And this comes out of the Mulligan's Fund. It's self-funded from
yes.
the Mulligan's
okay.
Fund.
Yeah,
no,
this,
I get
this
it.
Comes
you put
out.
Rental pavilion, I'm like, why are we renting a new pavilion?
We're renting it out because we can charge money for it.
I got it. No, I'm completely
yeah,
on board.
Yeah, it's just the
it
initial terminal.
So
I understand.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's part of our long-term plan to improve things.
Great. Like sounds good. I think.
Plus the sprinkler system, are we going to have it? Is everything working okay? I mean, I know
so
sometimes.
Our team is spending a lot of time in both figuring it out where it's at, how it works, and making the repairs. And as we make the repairs, we're upgrading those portions. And we're hopeful that we don't have to do the mass improvement all at once, but that we can do it in phases and zones as we have the resources. But a part of it is just the ongoing maintenance. You know, when we get a leak, sometimes we fix that leak, it changes the pressure and it blows out 4 more. And so we're chasing that. But our team's really good about, we make the right repairs that will last a long time and we're upgrading as we go. But that's always going to be on the table till we get through everything. But they're making good progress on it.
Yeah, just want to keep it looking nice. You know, there's been some times where, you know, it could look a little bit better, but it sounds like we're on top. You know, we'll be on top of it.
Yeah, and we've got a couple of new faces down there. I don't see Jeanette.
Who's managing?
In the back corner.
Who's managing?
Yeah.
Mine by Steven.
So
Steve.
Brad Baskey.
Oh, yeah.
Is our manager at Mulligan's, and they've got some good things going. And he's got some new members of the crew down there this year, so should be great. Sunil, do you want to wrap up any of the other budget items that are lingering for you?
Most of you, I've talked to you guys separately on these projects, but there are a couple of larger ticket items that are pending there. It's been in our 5-year plan for a while, and there has been a need for some time, but we kept pushing it, and it's coming to a point where there's a need for them. And the build on all these major projects, it takes about 2 years or so. So by the time we get funding in place and start building and actually build it, you know, it's gonna be a while. And for the last however long, the cost of these projects are not going down. It's just only keep increasing, and it's going to be that way, I think, for a while. But anyway, so there are three major projects that are in line. One of them is the water tank, and that water tank, we have talked about it, and it's already built into the water rate last year. The last year, the bond was paid off, and then so that and the debt service will continue with the new water bond. It's about $27 million. And so my intention is that within the next couple of months, I will have a intent resolution to you, Mayor Council, to issue the bond. And then obviously it takes about 5 to 6 month process to actually issue the bond, and I will have to time that. But in the meantime, I will also do an intent to reimburse resolution together with the intent to issue a bond resolution, where if we spend some money now after we have after you have adopted the resolution, we will be able to pay back with the bond proceeds. So that's going to be in the works. So I've been talking to these guys already, so I have a plan as to how to go about doing that. So that's in the works already, and no big deal.
Can I ask a question about that? Yeah. So you mentioned the prices. So have we already done an RFP and we selected who we're going to do it, or does that still need to happen as well?
That will happen. That will have to happen, yes. And they are in the process of doing the RFP right now, actually.
Okay.
But they will not engage the construction. The first thing that they'll have to do is put the line under the U11 before UDOT goes and does whatever, so we don't have to go back and redig the roads and whatnot. So that will be the first thing that we will do. But I want to make sure that our resolution is in place so we are able to reimburse with the bond money and not use up the savings. So the other two projects is the general fund related projects, mostly the public works building out west and the fire station 65. Public works building would probably take two years to build, and a fire station would be about a year and a half. It's a public works building. It's a little more expensive project. However, I would say about a third of the cost is already saved and put aside by our enterprise funds. The only bonding that needs to happen is from the general fund perspective. I have a plan. I have ideas to how we can do it. Obviously, this would be an incremental increase in our payment, which would mean that I need an incremental increase in revenues to cover for those, and we don't have those. You know, and so at some point, either in the budget process or however I have to do it, we'll have to strategize, and I'll have to come up with a plan. I think I have a plan, but I'm still thinking about it.
He doesn't want to say the bad word.
And then we have the fire station 65, which we're growing the outside in response time. I'm talking to Chief. It's been getting longer and longer, and a station would be needed, and that's a $20 million project. So,
yesterday.
if we.
Maybe there won't be tariffs in another year.
Yeah. So if we were to build a fire station and bring it online in July, so the thought process was to have the fire station in line on July of 2028, which means we have to start the project by January of springtime next year, which means I have to have funding in place, either then or a little later. With the public works building, same thing. If that building were to go online, January of 2028, we have to get it going in January of 2026 next year. So, those are the two general fund related that I'm thinking about it at some point. I'm going to have to, those two project probably will have to be the start talking point starting our strategic planning for the next budget cycle. So you can start thinking about it or keep that in mind when we start the 26-27 budget year.
That was very well said. Or not said. No, that was well done. Thank you.
Any questions? Our next steps then in the budget process would be to get a finalized tentative budget that we would then bring back for your review and for the public's review sometime
May 6th.
And then that's out for 30 days, and then we would look to do a final budget adoption in June to meet the state requirements.
So June 3rd would be that.
Adopting a balanced budget.
So the next budget meeting is May 6th?
Well, that'll be our regular council meeting, but we will be bringing the tentative budget so that you can release it to the public and everybody gets a chance to review it ahead of final adoption in June.
So between now and May 6th, we have no more budget meetings?
If there are more things you want to dig into, we certainly can.
No, I want to talk more numbers.
At this point,
more pain points.
We're about 90% of the way done with putting it all together. It's really now going back and really finalizing the numbers. You'll remember the last time we met, we talked about I was anticipating a 5% increase on our health insurance. I got that number. It's actually 8.9%. So we've got to go back and really fine tune what those numbers are to make it work with what we've got there. That's what most people are seeing on their renewals. So we'll go back now and we'll really fine tune everything to put it into the tentative budget.
I think that 8.9, that has been the largest increase for
a long time.
Many years for us. We've always been, under 5.
Yeah. This is the health insurance for the employees.
Yeah. This is the, because last time we talked about benefits and stuff and trying to keep those whole. Yeah, figuring out how to do that.
Do not have any other questions?
Just keeps getting more depressing. Let's not ask more questions.
Go ahead. Just a comment. Just, I think just in general, I think we're kind of, things are getting more expensive with inflation, and it's just kind of, it's, I think we're doing our absolute best to manage things and selecting the right projects and doing things the smart way. But at the end of the day, things are just costing more money. And just something that which probably ought to consider is it's much easier to do small incremental tax increases than do hold off and do big ones. People understand when it's a small amount, just okay, it's just kind of, but if we hold off and things get more and more expensive and we're putting off projects that down the road need to get done, and also we need to have bigger ones. Those are the tougher conversations.
Yep. Well said.
Yeah.
Anyone else? How many years ago was it that we did the?
The last time that we did an ask for an increase.
Was how many years ago?
It was 17.
2017. Well, actually 20.
We didn't raise taxes, but we.
No. Yeah.
We just captured.
Right. And what portion was that we captured? What was it? It was
the last one was 64, the portion of the debt service that I needed to make the difference. That's what it was.
To build Station 64. But as far as general funding, the day-to-day of the city has been...
No, we have never done.
We've never?
1,000 years.
Right.
It was 07, I think.
Almost 20 years.
I just don't think it's sustainable. And with the growth that we're seeing, I don't think it's scalable either with the path that we're on. And I just would hate to also just drop it, a year or two down on the residents and say, here's a big increase. I would hate to do that.
Have any city, I'm curious, have any cities, I mean, obviously we're not capturing the inflation. Have any cities passed a rule and ordinance where they're doing that consistently?
West Jordan does now.
West Valley has been for a while. Clinton does. There are several cities now
West
that Jordan's do that
recently
every
started
year
doing that. And Zach Jacob explained on his social media, I think a double-digit tax increase is harder to swallow. It's harder for me personally. And he said, so I think small incremental adjustments, you know, every year are easier. Of course, not everybody agreed. What? You're going to raise our taxes every year? What? You know, but he's not wrong that a double-digit increase, you're exactly right. Yeah. A bigger increase is harder than a smaller one. It just means you have to do it more often.
They've been doing it.
3-4 years ago. Okay, because I know he's
and we just haven't. I mean, we did for public safety when everybody did, and we had to, and we did to build Station 64, which was 5 years past due, and
it's a strategy that more and more cities are adopting because it eases the burden on the resident over time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because it's easier to absorb a few dollars increase each year than it is to have a $100 increase and then.
So West Jordan and West Valley have done that.
Yeah, there's quite a few cities that are moving in that direction now.
I think one of the important things, though, for us also to do as council members is when we meet with residents and they ask about taxes, you know, to be honest with them and let them know kind of where things are headed, what it looks like. I've met with residents a couple times where people have brought up, you know, well, when are you going to lower my taxes? And I kind of laugh and say, we're not. If anything, they'll be going up, and I explain the reasons why. And then also clarify that their large increase was due to the school district, not the city.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to just have those honest and open discussions with my residents as I'm meeting with them that it's not realistic that the city is going to come in and cut their taxes. And if anything, we need to increase their taxes, and I lay out the reasons why. Mm-hmm. The infrastructure improvements, new fire stations, public works, all those things. And then most of the residents all like, oh, that makes sense. But I think we have to be doing our part. You know, we talk a lot about communicating our message on other things. Taxes is one of those things we have to be communicating back to our residents where things are at.
And I like that diagram that the city does that shows all the different cities and the breakdown of fire and police and where we rate.
Mm-hmm.
And when I've gone door-to-door campaigning and taxes come up, I'll say, well, where do you think we fall on the scale of our county? And they always, oh, we're the highest. I'm like, no, we're like fourth for the bottom. So that's also a good
Or when residents also approach me, like I had one that's like, well, why don't we have an old dome building facility like Riverton has? Or things like that that they can be renting out that, you know, to them are nicer places than the Gale Center to rent out. You know, explain that ties into your taxes, what you're paying. So, go ahead.
Yeah, another part of our messaging, though, is that we, as a council, as a body, have decided that we're not going to charge our residents fees that don't go through a public process. We put all of our public safety, we put our parks, we put all of that into our general fund. And so when we do taxes, it's that. We don't have a separate parks fee. We don't have a separate public safety fee. We don't have, it's more forthright and it's not a fee.
It's not like
the residents don't get to weigh in on that. We can just decide that and say, okay, so we're, you know, data says we probably need this much more, so we're just going to set it there. We don't do it that way. We've opted not to do it that way, and we roll public safety and parks and things like that into our general fund. And I stand by that. I think that's just definitely a more transparent and more fair and more appropriate way to do it. You know? So, any other questions?
No, I just think that you know, Brad Marler, you can always talk about doing this thing. At the time, I didn't agree with him. You know, he was talking about it before all this major inflation was happening. Yeah, you know,
I almost called you Brad.
He's got more hair.
Yeah,
he's doing well. I saw him earlier.
Yeah, and
I see him every week.
But I didn't at the time. I didn't. You know, but times have changed with inflation. You know, and it's hard to stay on top of it, you know, and honestly, I think a small single digit increase, I'm just going to say a number like, you know, 4%, you know, something like that is, and just doing that periodically is a whole lot easier. It's a lot more palatable than start getting these double digit increases if we just start letting it stack. And so I don't think, you know, I think most of the residents, there's going to be some residents you do anything and they're going to be upset. And I understand that. But in general,
or if you don't do anything,
if you don't do anything, they'll
be upset.
They'll be upset because the services aren't good. You know, if the services aren't good. So, but I mean, scalability is a huge thing. When we look at where the growth that our city is going to see, and the expectation of our residents, I don't see how we can scale with the providing the level of services that we offer as a city that our residents come to expect. On this trajectory, and so and I don't want to shock. I also don't want to shock the system later on when residents start complaining more because the services are and the city's not being up to par because we're limited on various things and so I think there's a way to do it a palatable way, but I think if we don't get ahead of it. Then I think we're going to be behind it, and then we're going to have to do things that are more drastic down the road, which are going to be more painful.
Thank you. Okay.
We're out of time.
Thank you. We are out of time. However, we have a resident who also happens to be the Salt Lake County Auditor here with us. And so Chris Harding is here, resident of South Jordan and a duly elected Salt Lake County Auditor. And so like we do when we have an elected official who joins us, listen, you've been sitting through this meeting. And I wish you were blocked by the person sitting in front of you when I first said who was here. And then after I went, anyway, sorry. Do you have anything you'd like to share?
Yes, if you have a few minutes.
Our next meeting is supposed to start right now. However, we can either do it in there at the start of that. Is that okay?
Yeah. You betcha.
Okay. Like we do that. Anytime an elected official comes in, we invite them.
Your discussion right here is cooking up my ears.
Okay. If you're okay with that, we appreciate it. We'll go in and start the next meeting and turn the time over to you right after we do the pledge and whatever. As an elected official here, in person, we'll turn some time to you. Thank you. Okay, with that, I'll ask if there is a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Oops.
Okay, we're going to give the motion to Mrs. Zander and a second to Mr. McGuire this time. All in favor, please say aye.
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 All right, we are. I almost said a post. I don't know. Okay, so adjourn. We are.